Since the early 2000s, our screens have tightened their grip. Surround sound living rooms, endless gaming worlds, and infinite social feeds give us little reason to step outside. Movie theaters sit half empty, community hubs gather dust, and competing echo chambers feed a growing sense of disconnection. Yet, every so often, something breaks through the haze. A place that pulls strangers together and reminds us why shared wonder matters. Think of today's true immersive experiences, multi-sensory worlds where story, space, and technology merge seamlessly. In Las Vegas, the Sphere dazzles 18,000 people under a 16K dome, and its haptic seats turn a Darren Aronofsky film into a full-body rocket launch. But don't lump this in with the at-home headset craze. Early buyers of Meta's smart glasses and Apple's $3,500 Vision Pro already report sore necks, app deserts, and the awkwardness of eye contact through glasses. Immersion, it turns out, works best when it's shared. Now, half a world away, a Beijing tour bus eases through Yunmingyun Park, but passengers aren't staring at ruins. Transparent OLED windows rebuild the vanished summer palace in real time, triggered not by a play button, but by GPS waypoints on the route. Locals are calling it the Time Bus, and tickets have been sold out for weeks. If screens can melt into real streets, museums, concert halls, even the seat beside you, maybe storytelling can encourage us back into the same space, stitching our fragmented realities back together.
There was this layer of design and storytelling that is tracked and placed directly over the world you see outside to bring that space to life, to transform it into the past or a future vision or an imaginative sort of portal or window in time over top of the space you see.
The whole purpose of this bus and this design was this experience cannot happen without the audience being at the place on this drive where this happened.
That was my guests, Jeff Smith and Steven Peterson. I'm Demetrius Lynch, and this is Spaces, the podcast where we explore the forces that shape our spaces and how they shape us. Thanks for coming back, everybody. In today's episode, we're joined by Jeff Smith, former worldwide graphics chief at Electronic Arts, co-founder of iVapor, and mastermind behind global projects for top brands like Nike and Red Bull. We also have Steven Peterson, Emmy-winning creative director whose mixed reality magic elevated projects for Creed 3 and Alien Rogue Incursion, in addition to co-founding the creative studio Big Machine. Together, they dreamed up the Chronocraft, a shared AR theater. Now imagine boarding a hydrogen-powered tour bus gliding past Beijing's old summer palace ruins, while transparent windows resurrect gilded pavilions in real time. They fused 4K TOLED screens, 3D audio, and GPS-triggered storytelling into a 20-seat time machine. That begs a couple questions. How do you build what is essentially a moving holodeck, and why might it reconnect us in a disconnected world? We'll get into all of that after this break. Hi, Demetrius here. As you may know, Spaces is part of Gable Media, the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community and beyond. You may have heard me previously mention the development of a brand new membership platform for Gable Media. Well, it's finally here. You can now sign up to be a member at gablemedia.com/members. And as your first major perk, you gain exclusive access to our continuing education program, including AIA credit-worthy courses. That's right, Gable Media is now an official AIA CES provider, and you can get credit for listening to select Spaces episodes. The days of scouring the internet for online courses and running around town for credit-worthy presentations are over. I've tried out our program, and it is the most convenient way to get your continuing education credits. Now, this membership tier will be limited, so make sure to go to gablemedia.com/members or just click the link in the show notes to gain access today. listeners, this is a little bit of a different conversation. We're veering away from the normal building spaces, but we're getting into a mobile space today. I think there's going to be a little bit of blend of how some of this technology can go back and forth. But Steve, Jeff, I'm super excited to have you. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having us. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's exciting.
Jeff, I'll start with you. Give our listeners a little bit of a background for you, sort of an elevator pitch of your life and kind of your career.
My training is as an illustrator. So I have a degree in art, and I've been in the computer graphics industry for 40 years, 40 years. And I have worked in video games for 15 years. I've worked in live immersive entertainment for 15 years. And in the middle, I've done broadcast video animation and, you know, a couple other things. So, you know, live 3D computer graphics is kind of my thing. And, you know, of course, that's included a lot of places and, you know, visualizations of architecture and such like that.
And Steve, how did you get to where you are today?
Lost a bet. No, I'm just kidding. I went to our art school as well, up in Syracuse, New York, at SU, film art, got a degree in film. And then I worked in television, actually, down in Manhattan for Viacom Networks for a few years. Then moved out to Los Angeles in 2000 and continued to work in television, started a design studio in 2003, doing motion graphic design, visual effects, branding. Like main titles and show opens and stuff. And everything we did used some form of technology, which was always important to us as a studio, whether it was like, we were one of the first studios to use stereoscopic 3D. So when a lot of the networks were having a big push on using 3D glasses and stuff, we were making stereoscopic content. And we started to use robots in a lot of our shoots, motion control, and then high-speed cameras. And then, you know, recently in the last few years, just sort of evolving, seeing how entertainment is moving and understanding that sort of shared space experiences and sort of gathering and to me, at least the future of entertainment. Started doing a lot more work in experiential design, immersive entertainment, blending all that stuff, blending technology to tell stories.
Steve, how did you guys come together? And maybe as part of that, tell me a little bit about Chronocraft.
As to how Jeff and I got together, then I know Jeff could probably speak on the Chronocraft project itself. But back when I had my design studio and Jeff worked in the video game industry, we connected that way initially. We did some cutscenes for a video game that he was working on at the time. And then we kind of became fast friends. We had a lot in common. We're both pilots and we just connected. Yeah, and then just sort of stayed in touch and have been trying to find, you know, projects to work on since then.
We've worked well together as a team. He's the creative director, and I'm generally like a project director or, you know, just director. And we've done some other creative work on new products before in the past. And Chronocraft it's a long-term vision I've had of like a mobile theater that is shared augmented immersive entertainment based on specific locations. And so to start with specifically recreating past architecture through windows of, again, a mobile theater, which in this case is a bus platform. And it's transformed a bit beyond just windows with images on it that you can see the real environment through and have overlaid images into, you know, I call it mobile theater because it has a full three-dimensional surround system, a synced LED lighting system, and it really transports you into another space and eventually another time and place based on how the show goes. And I wanted it to be something that isn't just a clean kind of historical experience, but is more of, you know, has an engaging narrative arc along with telling the story of history. And once the project got approved and we were moving on it, Steve and I met and I asked him to work as creative director on the project.
What was the inspiration, sort of the seed to this idea? Why did you think it was necessary?
Well, a couple things. One of my missions in the business and then also for me personally is to get people out of the AR world and actually back into the real world together. And so shared immersive entertainment is my goal and vision and has been for about the past decade. And, you know, the entertainment industry has changed. You know, clearly movie theaters are gone. Everybody has all the entertainment they need at home. And I've seen VR goggles come and go 3 times now in my career. And it really is, it's the same thing every time. Even the 90s VR was just the same, more or less, as the VR now. It's isolating. It's clumsy. It's not a natural way to view stuff. And more importantly, you can't be with other people. You know, and the same thing with video games to a large extent, or you're isolated at least, you know, in person. However, you know, the standard entertainment experiences have kind of gone stale, with the exception of sporting events and festivals, you know, music festivals. People love those because you're going out, you're being with a group of people, you're having a passionate and engaging time with them. And so I've been looking for ways to have a transformative, immersive entertainment experience that gives you that same feeling of going to a particular place and with a particular group of people at a particular point in time and sharing an amazing experience. And so, you know, to kind of summarize that all, I've been working on developing projects in China, and the bus started out initially as being able to drive around the Third Ring Road in China and recreate the wall that used to be on the Third Ring in Beijing. In particular, as I got to know China and its history, it's just amazing the amount of stuff that's lost that people can't see anymore. And what a better way to do it than have this mobile theater that can recreate the past for you on the windows as you go by that particular place where that history used to exist.
Steve, for you as a creative director, what did having this mobile palette mean to you? What was the part that was unlocked for you? What was the challenge for you? How did you approach this concept?
Yeah, one of the most exciting things about working in experiential design to me has been basically furthering the spatial design of projects. Still fortunate enough to work on a lot of commercials and you know, direct commercials. And one of my favorite parts is working with the production designers and art directors to like design sets or design the spaces, set up blocking camera moves, a way to photograph the space. So immersive design experiential is sort of a real world version of that. And then this project takes it to a whole other level because you're taking into account the space and the world that you're traveling in is 100% a character in the story we're telling, but then you're using a piece of technology between you and the real world and the environment to tell a greater narrative. So on the augmented reality glass we used, you know, we're then on top of that, there was this layer of design and storytelling that is tracked and placed directly over the world you see outside to bring that space to life, to transform it into the past or a future vision or, you know, an imaginative sort of portal or window in time over top of the space you see. So it was like the ultimate sort of sandbox to play in.
Just to reinforce what Steve said, the whole purpose of this bus and this design was this experience cannot happen without the audience being at the place on this, you know, on this drive where this happened. You know, that's the entire framework and point of it. It's not a walkthrough museum. It's not a dry historical recreation. It's you are there. And as you drive through the park, we're on a shared road. There's other park visitors there. You see people outside the window as we're recreating buildings that haven't been seen for hundreds of years, where they used to exist in complete architectural authenticity with the period vegetation and lighting changing as the light changes throughout the day at the park.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. So you can see actual people here today walking around, but it alters the background?
Yeah. So we place historical buildings at the place they existed on the current set of land. It's like a magic window. It just transforms a barren landscape into, you know, it builds the building up. And it's not a, you know, it's not like we're taking over the window with a fully synthetic scene. It's still the real park trees. It's still the real river in the park running through. If there's people sitting on the bank of the river, you see them with the historical building behind them.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is like a whole different thing to me now. So is there like a design-wise, are you doing like a geospatial placing using Google Maps or something to locate these buildings? Or how does that technical side work?
Yeah, it's live 3D, real-time 3D in the actual geolocation with, you know, the lens match and the perspective match and the distance matches. And, you know, it's kind of a, it's along the lines of what's done in movies where you composite in CG to fit in the real world. But it's done on a transparent OLED screen, which is clear. And then it has another film on it that also allows us to darken the screen, you know, at whatever desired light transmission we want, and then place real-time rendered graphics on that screen and put the background behind it so it's a seamless match.
Wow.
The other little trick to the whole thing was doing all that while you're in a moving vehicle that could yeah. potentially hit a pothole or hit a speed bump. So we also were able to take into account the movement of our mobile theater. So like the yaw, the pitch, the roll, so to speak, it would take all that into account. So it you know, gives the audience a feeling like, you know, every bump is kind of interacts with the projection. So it really helps make it seem like a great composite, if you will.
Yeah. And to your point, we did have an authoring tool that actually did have a Google map with the route of the bus, and you could see a virtual bus drive along that route with content being authored to fit at those particular waypoints, which were GPS geolocations that the sensors read on the bus in real time and ran all the three-dimensional audio, the soundtrack, the lighting, the visuals, you know, et cetera. And as Steve said, you know, INS sensors that kept everything in sync.
So you mentioned that you guys were both pilots. Did using pilot training software inform some of this?
That's interesting. It's funny because even just the last words I used, like pitch and yaw, I was like, oh yeah, I guess yeah. that is kind of, to me at least, I didn't see a specific sort of like aviation stuff ported over to what we were doing. But I think a lot of the thinking was probably, you know, it was helpful to have that awareness of just spatial awareness and a vehicle moving through space with all those different axes of movement. At least that's from my point of view, but I know Jeff could potentially speak to the techies behind it all.
Well, and I would say that, you know, I mean, I cut my teeth on flight simulators as a 3D, you know, 3D application. So that's, you know, that was the very earliest of three-dimensional things. And so, yeah, I mean, flight sims inform a lot of stuff these days.
Yeah. And the reason I asked, you're the second episode that I've had with a former pilot that used flight simulators. And she has an AR program now that places buildings on site so you can see the building there in its real context. So it's just fascinating that you guys are doing this as well. Maybe just a crazy coincidence.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and being a pilot, you, as Steve said, you have to have the situational awareness and you have to be really good with maps and coordinates and placing yourself at a particular place at a particular time, because otherwise there's the whole hitting the ground or mountains thing, which is, you know, bad form in piloting.
Yeah, I would think so. Are there any other special considerations when you guys took on this project from an actual practical sense of getting people onto this bus? And were there any challenges with pitching this to the local jurisdiction of having these screens everywhere? Also, how does the driver's seat and the passenger seat sort of interact? Because you can't screen their view, obviously. So all those sorts of things. Were there any other special considerations when you laid this out?
So the passenger compartment is entirely enclosed from the driver. So it's its own little cocoon. And the only way you see out of the passenger compartment is through the transparent OLED screens. driver has a user interface with a map and the ability to start and stop the show. And also the map gives him guidance as to what speeds to drive in the park. Again, it's an open road. It's shared with pedestrians and bicyclists and other buses. And so part of the challenge of the narrative was to allow for, you know, slowdowns in traffic, and as well for some of the prime locations, we wanted to make sure that the driver slowed down to a certain speed at a certain place and then sped back up to make sure the passengers got a good view of the environment. Beyond that, it's a standard, you know, electric tour bus that's been heavily modified. It's 20 seats. It's got a bunch of doors. Getting people in and out, it's no problem. It's a 15-minute ride, you know, obviously full air conditioning control, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's a comfortable ride. It did take quite some time to sell this, and that's what my Chinese partner did. He spent quite a while, basically 2 years, selling the idea to the park staff and then ultimately to the government, because it is a government property. The Yangmingyan Park is the most treasured historical location in China for Chinese people. Just a quick sidebar, I don't know if you know the Opium Wars and that sort of thing back, what, a couple hundred years ago. This is called the Old Summer Palace, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's the summer palace of the king, the emperor at the time, and it was destroyed during the Opium Wars. And so that's a big cultural thing for Chinese people. And essentially, everyone in their lifetime makes a visit to the park.
I just wanted to clarify, the screen shows exactly how fast or slow the bus is moving, rather than the bus having to coordinate with like a pre-recorded show. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, that was kind of, to me, at least to me, from my sort of side of things as the creative director, one of the biggest challenges was that this wasn't like a ride on rails. You know, this wasn't like you go to Disney and you ride one of their rides, like any of them. Rise of the Resistance, for instance, has all this like sophisticated, like an invisible track that it's on, and it's a closed track, which makes life so easy, you know, at a theme park ride. Because as Jeff was saying, this is public roadway that's shared with pedestrians and cyclists and other small little vehicles and stuff. It's always a little different, which is kind of fun. You know, the experience is different. You may see something that's different, but just figuring out how to make that work every time, depending on the speed up and slow down of the bus driver. They had a margin. The route was driven ad nauseum, like so many times, to find like, you know, optimal speeds and optimal how long the experience would take and how complex to make certain animations at the certain points of interest. But yeah, as you mentioned, Demetrius, it's designed so that the experience is based on the bus driving through the space, not the other way around.
In the design world, we often will not spend our time rendering the areas that won't be seen. So the back of the building can sometimes be just a white wall. Is that kind of, it sounds like you're kind of hinting at that, the places where you're going to slow down and sit for a minute, you really wanted to put all your attention on that.
Oh yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. That it's funny you mentioned that specific. I remember, correct me if I'm wrong again, Jeff, but there was a time when, you know, the historical accuracy of the project was super important, you know, obviously because of all of the factors, the historical significance, the, you know, the cultural significance. It was just, we worked with historians to make sure the buildings, the architecture was pretty much exact. At one point, one of the buildings got changed and all of a sudden the experience, like, you know, broke. It was like part real world experience, part video game, where like you're debugging, you're testing, you're continuing to optimize it. And I believe they put in a building with like too many polygons. It had like way too much, you know, it was too heavy of a 3D model. So then to optimize it and kind of get things working again smoothly, we had to go in and just like gut, like you said, the part of the building we didn't see, the interiors that were, you know, in this 3D model, that was what was being projected. And then everything was back on track again.
Jeff, you had hinted at this earlier, how the theater is pretty much dead. Another area is the retail space. Have you guys started to think about how this moves into static spaces and how it can elevate and maybe bring some of these spaces back to life? Is there a future for this concept to evolve into other avenues?
I mean, I would say 100%. And that's exactly what we're thinking of and imagining right now. So there's kind of two ways. There's the outside in and there's the inside out transformation. So the outside in would be to take some other, you know, a mobile platform, could be an identical bus platform, but you then drive around the space, or, you know, as Steven brought up, like drive through an abandoned container park. You have mapped that entire world with scanning. So you have that as a real-time 3D database. And then as you drive through it, you transform it into another world, you know, into a different space, into a fantastical thing. And it could be one experience in the day and one experience in the night. Or the idea of location-based augmented entertainment is valid whether or not you're moving through the environment on a bus, you know, through a park-like thing, or you're in a fixed environment that you transform that into, let's say, a holodeck type of thing, you know, or you start to build these holographic screens and displays. The important thing to us, you know, Steve and I, is that it has engaging narratives and that it tells a story, and it has a reason for people to leave their home and come out to experience something new and different. And that's really the key of this kind of next kind of entertainment, is how do you pull people out of their house? You know, and it has to be with technology for the most part, because that's what everyone is used to. You know, the public is never going to use augmented reality glasses, you know, or goggles. And they're, you know, VR, of course, there's a niche market, but it's very, very small relative to the general public. What I like to envision is, if I brought my parents to this, how would they experience it? How would they feel? So whatever space can support an engaging narrative, as well as then be grounded in something physical, some physical location, that then gets transformed into this augmented space that becomes a, you know, a magic realm that tells you a story with characters and becomes a reason to leave your VR world at home with your social media, or, you know, your streaming, you know, ad nauseum content.
Have you guys been to, there's a museum in Vegas that has screens everywhere, and I believe they rotate the art, but it's all LED screens, and it has these virtual artworks that move around and lights and different things that happen. Have you seen that yet? I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
I haven't. Last time I was there, I was made aware of it, and I really, it's on the list for sure, but I haven't been. Have you been? Is it awesome?
Yeah, it's like probably the most exciting museum experience that I've been to, just because it's so it's immersive artwork, really. So the screens are all around you, floor to ceiling, probably two or three story tall, and there's, you know, light shows. And at this particular one that I went to, I believe it was Van Gogh, they had one space. So they brought Van Gogh's artwork to life, and you're kind of going inside of his paintings, and it's changing all around you. So I see this being, you know, something that can easily transfer. And to your point, Jeff, this is what will get people out, and you're experiencing it together amongst, you know, all the people around you, rather than being sort of tunnel vision in your own world.
Exactly correct. And I've been to a number of those digital walkthrough galleries. They did go to one that was specifically the Van Gogh one. There's another group out of Tokyo called Team Lab, and they have had a similar thing going for 10 years now, kind of touring Asia. And so, and those are very engaging, and lots of people go to them. And that is kind of one of the springboards for these kinds of projects for us. But bringing our video game and visual effects and storytelling skills to kind of up the level beyond the digital gallery walkthrough type of thing, to make it more of, again, an experience and tell a bit of a story, and again, have a narrative arc. You know, we kind of build tension, and, you know, have some adventure, and then you have, you know, Steve could explain how story arc works better than I, but definitely, that's the thing, is like take it to the next level. And things like the Las Vegas Sphere, I mean, that's getting there as well. Like the immersive spherical entertainments are, you know, still more or less movies, but moving into, you know, really immersive entertainment. And it's now a word that people know, which is great. And I think one of the next steps from there is 3D, you know, ideally 3D without glasses, but maybe lightweight glasses or something, because then that gets to be kind of more of a holographic thing. And I do think that cities of the future, such as Neom and such, will be built with this as just part of the construction, part of the city life.
Steve, from that story aspect, can you talk a little bit about what was brought to the Chronocraft? And I'd love to hear your thoughts about maybe how that story element can be brought into theaters, retail, to elevate those spaces and bring people into or back into.
Yeah, sure. The great thing about the project too, Chronocraft, was it was, of course, a lot of sort of historical stuff, kind of first and foremost, which kicked off the whole project, like showing what was here and why it was there. But then they came to us specifically because of our, you know, Western story sensibility. And they wanted us to bring sort of like a cinematic storytelling aspect to the project. So it wasn't just, let's drive through and see a building, and then we drive to another hill and see the building that was on that hill, and we drive, you know, it was like, what's the narrative thread that is entertaining and more importantly emotional? Because it feels like, probably like in any art or architecture, it's like if you can move somebody or get them to feel something, that's how you connect with them, that's how they remember whatever it is you're doing and creating. So that's really what we did. It's like we try to kind of put all that in a blender, and it's like, okay, we have to show these different points of interest, but what's the kind of fun narrative, emotional through line we can create within all of it that stays true to the culture and the real history, but is also fun and engaging and draws you in? And so, yeah, we worked with some awesome writers that have, you know, experience in that in filmmaking and in storytelling, to work with the historians to bring those two bits and pieces together. So you really have this fun arc, this beginning, middle, and end. There's a mini adventure that the audience goes on every time. And then they've accidentally learned a whole bunch of stuff along the way.
Yeah. Do you see that exercise easily working its way into some of the static spaces of theater retail? Or is that something that may be a little bit more of a challenge?
I personally think it's a must. And I mean, I think that's how Jeff and I approach all the different projects, is from that aspect. If not, in essence, you're just making a tech demo. You know, if you don't connect, if you don't have some kind of emotional core heart to what you're creating and can combine that with the brand and with the product and whatever the commercial aspect of the project is, it's just like, hey, look at this cool whiz-bangy new tech that we're setting up in a mall or in a public space or wherever. I mean, at least I think that's the goal.
Jeff, has the Chronocraft made it to the US yet, or is it still just in China?
Still just in China. It has a lot of interest in the US from a variety of different industries. One of the challenges is explaining what it is and what it's like, because it's one of those things that if you're not there, you don't understand the experience. You have to be in it. And there's not too many analogs to it. I mean, you can, again, same thing with like the Sphere. I've been doing dome shows for, I got more than a decade. And it's one of those things where until you actually go inside a dome and see what it feels like, kind of impossible to describe, and it's impossible to capture on a camera. So to that end, what we're doing is working on getting an effort in place and funding and such to bring a bus here and be able to show people, you know, how it works. And there's not a lot of crossover between, you know, social media and viral elements between China and the US. So it kind of stays isolated there. Until we actually have something here.
Of the interest lists, or even maybe your own personal interest lists, is there a location and kind of a story that you would love to tell through the Chronocraft?
I'll talk about a couple of things, but Steve has talked about, you know, Halloween drive-through things and holiday entertainments, which is, you know, something people go to drive to see. But then, you know, pick any historical location in the U.S. There's a lot of things that would be fascinating to tell stories of. We've talked about the ideas of you know, driving through downtown Manhattan and recreating a fantasy world as you drive through it. Personally, one of the things that's really interesting is there are numerous bus tours of the SpaceX launch site, and it would be awesome to do, you know, a show based around rockets and outer space. And, you know, there's so many directions you can go with that genre as well.
From my background, sort of coming from entertainment first and just, I live right across the street from Universal Studios. This could be an incredible thing for like a studio tour, because you're driving through, you know, actual physical sets, but then you could see the scene from War of the Worlds as you drive through the plane crash, or you could see the scene, you could see Norman Bates walk out of the Psycho House as you walk past the Psycho House. Also, to merge Jeff's background into this, you could drive through a video game, like, because, you know, the engine is of this thing is inherently like a 3D real-time engine, which most games are built on now. You can plug in the world of Fortnite or put in the current super popular video game, whatever that is, you know, and drive through Fortnite to bring it into your world, Demetrius. We could drive through the site of Neom being built and see the city before it's even broken ground, you know, like see where things are going to go and drive through it spatially and feel how long it takes you to get from A to B and what you see along the route. The Olympics are coming to LA, and how awesome would it be to have shuttles that take you to and from the venues? And as you're getting there, you're driving through a history of whatever event you're going to see. I mean, gosh, it's like an endless amount of cool ideas to do with this thing.
Yeah, sounds like it. What societal changes do you see that we're kind of going through or will be or on the horizon that are going to impact this concept? Maybe some of those future ideas that you have. Steve, I'll start with you.
Well, number one, no more COVID, please. No more no more lockdowns, and no more not letting people gather. Because if you can't gather, you can't do this. But no, other than that, I mean, it's an exciting time. I mean, I feel like CES this year was full of all kinds of cool display technology, and you know, I feel like this is coming. You know, the attempt, you know, you can see big giant tech companies like Apple trying with their Apple Vision Pro. I mean, of course, that has its own issues, but this is like you're in a giant mobile holographic craft, you know, so to speak, driving through the real world. I'd like to think that hopefully this solves some of those issues where, you know, being in a mobile theater like this, you don't have to be encumbered by devices, you know, or all kinds of other things. It's like what Jeff was saying, like, how would my parents be able to like experience this? It's like literally sit and experience it with your friends.
Yeah. Jeff.
Yeah. I would say that, we're on the verge, not on the verge of, but we have been needing to develop a new way to share our narratives. You know, we had the written word, we've had paintings, we had photography, we've had film, you know, we've got music, you know, all those things work. None of them address this new virtual world that we've created with, you know, everything that's virtual, all of our social media apps, all of our browsing, all that. We don't have what's the next step beyond a flat screen. And I think that's where we're going with all of the immersive entertainment attempts, you know, it's or solutions or directions, whatever you want to call it. And where does that end up? I mean, you know, science fiction movies have certainly visualized numerous ways of you've got, you know, the flat transparent screen you hand around, you've got a thing you swipe, you know, you Minority Report stuff. I mean, all that is out there as possible user interfaces. And that's really the thing, you know, we're talking about a new user interface. We're talking about a new platform for people. And the industry and society are actually working on developing that right now. And that, to me, is, Steve was saying, it's a fascinating time. You know, the idea of immersive entertainment was not something you could say to someone 5 or 8 years ago because they didn't know what that meant. Now it's a little more in the kind of the common lexicon of communication. You know, and ultimately, it's about connection. It's about bringing people together. in a space and time to share our reality together, not to be isolated. And most previous forms of sharing our narratives were all about sharing it together. And you can say social media does that, but there's something in the way our brains work that if we're not in person, we're different people than if we're in person. And so, again, it's back to kind of bringing us together as communities, but still acknowledging that it needs to have technology. We live in a technological online society, so we need to evolve into what's that next way of entertainment and communication.
I love that because we, like you've said, we have this issue of this rising isolationism in the country and bringing us together without the bots and all the things that manipulate how we perceive the world. This is a solution to that, to bring us back together and to not be so manipulated by all the bad actors in the world. We can actually see each other, experience together, talk together. So I really love this concept. Really hope this you can get this here in the U.S. So I'm rooting for you guys. Thank you so much for your time. If people want to follow along, we'll have all of that in our show notes, all the links to additional content that you can see about the project. So make sure to check the show notes. Thank you again, Steve, Jeff. Really enjoyed this. Thank you to the listeners for listening, and we will talk again on the next one. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Spaces is brought to you by Lines, my Southern California-based architecture and creative studio that provides services focused on custom homes, home renovations, creative office, and specialty retail spaces. Find out more at lines.studio. That's lines.studio. If you learned something from this episode or think it would resonate with a friend, please share it and rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It really helps others find the show. If you have a question about the built environment or just want to share whatever is on your mind, I'd love to hear from you. You can do that at lines.studio/podcasts. Looking for similar content? Spaces is a proud member of Gable Media, a digital media platform where you can find even more content like this. Visit gablemedia.com, and that's gablemedia.com. And lastly, before I go, if you want to see additional photos, videos, clips, and other content from this episode, visit lines.studio/podcasts. Talk soon.